Sure Sheen Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Well, shalom once again, everybody. This is Bill Cloud, and this is our Torah tidbit taken from the Torah portion called Miketz, or at the end, one of my favorite Torah portions. Miketz refers to the fact that after the butler was released from prison, just as Joseph had said would happen, 2 full years went by before God intervened and then initiated a series of events that led to the fulfillment of the dreams that God had given to Joseph many, many years before. Now, ironically, those events included another pair of dreams. And so the portion begins for us in Genesis chapter 41, verse 1, and says this: "Then it came to pass at the end," and there's that word miketz, "at the end of 2 full years, that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he stood by the river." So again, it had been 2 full years since Joseph, after interpreting his dream, asked the cupbearer to remember me before Pharaoh. Now, either the cupbearer was purely wicked and just wanted to forget the man, or he was just very forgetful. Or the season that God had foreordained deliverance to occur unfolded just as he determined, not before, not later, but right on time. Also consider that Joseph is a type of Messiah and consequently was destined to suffer before being glorified, as we covered in our previous portion. Now, according to the text, in the dream, Pharaoh stood by the river Nile, which was the source of Egypt's prosperity, which in fact was given a godlike status among the Egyptians. And Pharaoh saw 7 healthy cattle coming up out of the river, feeding on the reed grass, followed then by 7 lean and poor-looking cattle standing by the healthy. And so it goes on to say that the unhealthy cattle devoured the healthy ones. And the dream, as we are later told by Joseph, was to symbolize that the prosperity was represented by the fat, healthy cows would be swallowed up by the gaunt, unhealthy cows, bringing an end to Egypt's prosperity. And it seems that though this famine would begin in Egypt, it would then engulf all the other nations as well. In other words, it would emanate from Egypt but then spread out. And then we see that Pharaoh's second disturbing dream was different but yet told the same story. 7 years of plenty followed by 7 grievous years of lack, this time symbolized by 7 healthy heads of grain or ears of grain that were then followed by 7 withered ears of grain that had been scorched by an east wind. Now, while the cows presumably represent the plowing of the fields, the grain represented the harvest. And so with good harvest during those 7 plenty years, there would be food for all, including the animals used to sow. But with the bad harvest, represented by the 7 withered ears or the 7 gaunt cows, all would go hungry, including those cows. And so the Bible records for us in Genesis chapter 41, verse 8, "So in the morning his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh." Now, for years, I have found it amazing, and I've commented on this from time to time, that 2 of the most significant prophetic dreams in all of Scripture were given not to God's prophets, but to pagan, idol-worshiping kings. Kings who happened to be, at that particular time in history, the most powerful men in the world. Because this dream with Pharaoh, compare it to the dream and the uncertainty about the meaning of the dream that was given to Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And that's recorded for us in Daniel chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. It says, "In the 2nd year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Then the king commanded that the magicians, the enchanters, the different sorcerers, and the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dreams." So the same scenario, just many years later. And I want you to notice that Nebuchadnezzar's dream came after a 2-year period. Just as it was with Pharaoh, he was given his dream at the end of 2 full years. And also like Pharaoh, Nebuchadnezzar didn't understand the dreams. And so that's when he called upon those in his kingdom to interpret, only to find that for all of their presumed wisdom, none of the Babylonian wise men knew the answer. And so then, like Pharaoh before him, the king of Babylon was compelled to call upon the one man in the kingdom, the one man that God had allowed to be brought captive into Babylon, just as Joseph was brought into Egypt, the one man that God had positioned to be in the right place at the right time. He called upon him to give the interpretation to the king. So then, back to Pharaoh, when no one could interpret his dreams, the chief butler finally spoke up, and he said to Pharaoh, "I'm going to make mention of my faults today." And so he goes on to relate the story of being in prison and how he had a dream and Joseph's accurate interpretation of that dream. Still, as the cupbearer related this story to Pharaoh, he described Joseph in what seems to me, anyway, to be judgmental terms. He said he was a youth, which means, in other words, he was immature, he's ignorant. He's a Hebrew, which was someone that was despised by the Egyptians, and he was a slave, an inferior class of people. But even though he put it this way, nevertheless, the Bible says in verse 14 of chapter 41, "Then Pharaoh sent, and he called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit." And I want to underscore that word, quickly. "They quickly brought him out of the pit, and when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh." Now, I want you to notice that the dungeon or the prison house is also called a pit. And for the record, this word here that's used is the same Hebrew root word that was used to describe the pit that his brothers cast him into years before. But I want you to also notice, because we underscored this word, that they brought him out quickly, reminding us that when our salvation comes, it will be quick and most likely unexpected. Because remember, years after this event, Israel would eat the Passover. They would eat it with their loins girded, their staff in hand. They would eat it in haste. And according to the prophets, the Messiah will come suddenly. And so let's think of it this way. For 2 years, Joseph had sat in prison, even though he had correctly interpreted the butler's dream, and even though he had requested that this man would remember him before Pharaoh. And for 2 years, that man forgot, or he chose to forget, Joseph. I point this out because I find it improbable that Joseph knew that God would visit Pharaoh in a dream, and that very suddenly he would be released from his cell. I think it was unexpected. But he was, and you know the story. Joseph went and stood before Pharaoh. He did interpret the dream, and according to his interpretation, Pharaoh was being warned of what was coming in the future so that he would know how to cope with what was coming in the future. And it's at that point that Joseph provided some unsolicited advice as to what should be done. And here is Pharaoh's response to that advice in Genesis chapter 41, beginning in verse 38. "And Pharaoh said to his servants, 'Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God?' Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and as wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you.'" And then it says that Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." And so then, in a sense, what happened here is, well, unthinkable. It's impossible that a young foreign slave who has been in prison, mind you, was made the ruler of Egypt. That would seem improbable, impossible. This in spite of the fact that according to historians, Egyptian law forbid a slave from being appointed to such a high position. But as we all know, with God, all things are possible, regardless of culture, regardless of politics, finances, and any other circumstance that we would say makes something impossible. But now, it was really important that Joseph be in the right place at the right time so that the impossible could happen. And I would add to that, that he have the right heart, the right attitude, and right spirit. In fact, notice that Pharaoh is the one that declared Joseph to be full of the Spirit of God. And it was Pharaoh who said that he was discreet or discerning, as well as wise. And where did Joseph obtain these necessary attributes? In my opinion, Joseph obtained these during his hardships, or cultivated these during his trials and the imprisonment. These tests are what provoked these innate qualities to grow and to come to the surface for all to see. And so then, to seal his decision, Pharaoh placed his signet ring on Joseph's finger, designating him as recipient of royal authority and as the leader of the government. And thus it was, the despised one was in an instant given all authority. And I wonder who that hints at. Well, obviously, it hints at the Messiah. In fact, this portion is pregnant with messianic overtones. However, that isn't what I want to focus on as much as this truth. That is this: God always has his man or his woman positioned to be in the right place at the right time. And that truth is obvious in the story of Joseph. It's clearly seen in the story of Daniel, as we've already indicated. It was the same way with Samuel, because even as God was bringing down the house of Eli, the high priest, with his two sons, Hophni and Pinchas, he had already positioned Samuel to fill the vacuum that their demise would create. This is true with Esther. God hid her in the king's house as queen so that she could be an instrument of deliverance for his people at the appropriate time. And so without fail, he has always positioned his people to be where they need to be for such a time as this. And so then, considering that this Torah portion is called Miketz, or at the end, I want to recommend that those of us who find ourselves living at the end need to take note of this principle. This portion strongly suggests that at the end, difficult times will come much like they did in the days of Joseph, with the 7 years of famine that were so awful, people forgot about the days of plenty. At the end, his people will be subjected to hardships and persecution, maybe even imprisonment. But in the end, if they will hold on and if they will persevere, they will find that the hardships was a critical part of God's plan, that he might position them to be in the right place at the right time. And even if they do find themselves in the darkness of prison, whether literally or metaphorically, thinking that perhaps God has forgotten them, unbeknownst to them, it might be at that very moment that he is preparing to visit the world's most powerful people, visiting them in the night with dreams or what have you, in order to initiate another series of events whereby all Israel will be saved. And in spite of what it may cost, I desperately want to be where he wants me to be, that is, in the right place at the right time. And I know that you do as well. But we need to consider the cost. That's it for this week's Torah Tidbit. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time, and Shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BillCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.